Is that you, Don?
Yes, it is.
We finally got there. That's great. I'm so glad you're there. I was just very concerned. I thought you're always you can always be relied on. What's happened to you, man?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I heard the phone and I picked up that nothing was happening, and then I've just come downstairs to another place and rung again.
Thank you very much. So we were going to have a chat about Australia's manufacturing capabilities now that we're in the midst of COVID and everything is becoming quite obviously unravelling.
Yes.
What have you found out?
Are we live at the moment?
What's that?
Are we live?
Yeah, we are. Go for it.
Excuse me, okay.
I'm sorry, it's just everything. Listeners, you'll just have to forgive the first program shambles. You know, we're live. Go for it.
Oh, terrific. Well, g'day to everyone and Happy New Year, and I hope that becomes possible at some stage for all of us, not just a few. And it's wonderful to be back, and the thing that sort of hit me is we go into this new developments around Omicron and the carry-on from the government and from others is that this struggle to make something really quite basic available to everybody, and that is the RATs, the rapid antigen tests. And so I did a little bit of thinking about this, and I thought, well, wasn't there a thing called the Manufacturing Task Force set up way back in the early weeks, if not early months, of the pandemic to deal with things like making sure that commodities like testing commodities would be available to the general public. And sure enough, there was. And yet, in the nearly 2 years now since... Well, it is almost 2 years since the onset of the pandemic in Australia, and then it's nearly 2 years since all of these emergency measures were put in place, and all of the big hitters that the Morrison government put in charge of developing a plan to do with manufacturing. Remember the pivot to manufacturing?
Yeah. And I'm sure they're being paid huge amounts of money for their incredible brains trust.
Yes. Well, I haven't dug into that aspect of it.
No.
Right, it's an angle that I didn't really think about. But sure enough, the Manufacturing Task Force did produce a report for the government, but the government has not been able to translate that into delivery, and nor have they. And they've actually been silent about the situation. And the situation is, of course, that there are not enough RATs available in Australia so that the general population can use them, and specifically so that those who are in essential work can use them, in order so that they themselves can have greater control over making sure that workplaces are not sites of infection and can make sure that public safety is safeguarded through the way in which work sites operate.
That's so amazing. Really,
I think, and the deeper I dug, we're verging on yet another scandal when you look very closely at what's going on.
They're just such, I mean, it's really difficult to work out if this federal government's incompetent or just straight out corrupt.
Well, I'm going to suggest that in this case it's, there's a little bit of both in both of those things for reasons that we'll come to in a moment. But the main thing is, I think the big question mark is that the flurry of concern and enthusiasm for manufacturing was really not fair dinkum, because what it was really about was enabling another mechanism to escalate the status of the mining industry relative to manufacturing. And particularly when it comes to gas extraction, whether through fracking or other means. The very first thing, so just to go back, the first thing that was set up was the National COVID Commission, the NCCC, and that was headed by a bloke called Neville Power. Neville Power came out of Twiggy Forrest's Fortescue. He was a senior executive, very, very senior executive, originally from from out of Western Australia. He was put in charge of the NCCC. One of the first things that the NCCC then was set up a number of task forces, and one of them was this modern manufacturing task force. And the person in charge of that was a guy called Andrew Liveris. Now, these two characters distinguished themselves later on, very quickly in certain ways in the case of Liveris, but both of them in sync advocated natural gas, in most cases methane emitting natural gas, as the centrepiece of any pivot to modern manufacturing. And so there wasn't really a clear focus upon the really practical things that needed to be done to enable Australian manufacturing, both the employers and the workers in the workforce and those who would be potentially employed in it, to make their contribution to dealing, in a genuine strategy to deal with the pandemic. So it was gas, gas, gas.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that's fascinating is that they can't help themselves. They have to use the word modern manufacturing as if it's going to be old-fashioned manufacturing, for God's sake.
It's a very good point. The background to all of this, of course, is that in manufacturing, with the support of the employer organisation, and the main one is the Australian Industry Group, and this is really important to keep in the background of all of everything that Morrison and the Fraudenberg talk about, is that employers are not investing. So even in manufacturing, the volume of profits is going up, the proportion of those profits that is being spent by them in new capital investment is falling. Now, that's true across the economy generally, but it's true for manufacturing. So this is the backdrop. And so the only way in which the word modern makes sense is to the extent to which the task force and then the government is firstly organising a pivot that enables manufacturing to deal with the present circumstances of the pandemic, but also is moving in towards advanced digitisation and so on in manufacturing processes, and is also making commodities that are relevant for the medium and longer term future. And that means a pivot that enables manufacturing to be both green in its manufacturing processes and also producing products that are not based upon carbon emissions. Now, in all of the information I've looked at so far from government sources, there is precious little evidence that wishful thinking, as expressed in reports, is being translated into serious reality. And the rats is a sort of, what not happened around rats production in Australia is a perfect example. A week ago today, the ABC highlighted that there were probably about four employers who were trying to set up a manufacturing capacity and had been trying to do so to make rats in Australia, and had been trying to do so for some time, including in consultations with the government. But they had run into all sorts of problems. One of them is actually to the point of being able to do mass production has set up a manufacturing operation in Florida, according to that report.
Oh, my goodness.
So this task force and the urgency and the enthusiasm from this very dodgy prime minister was all a blind, because what it did instead was enable the climate change, the global heating minister, Angus Taylor, to grab hold of the report's recommendations around gas to escalate his approach to the future of industry in Australia. This, I mean, this really is quite a...
It's huge. It's a huge scandal.
It gets really interesting when you dig further. Neville Power, this is the head of the Commission Task Force. The COVID Commission, right? So he's the head honcho of it all. It was shut down, of course, in about May last year, this commission, because, you know, wishful thinking or counting the chickens or whatever you want to call it, Morrison shut it down because...
we don't need it anymore.
His job had been done. I mean, what
a wanker.
Then the modern... Mr. Power, of course, has been caught and accused of using his helicopter to go across the Western Australian border against the COVID restrictions of the government from which his company, the Western Australian government is, of course, the Western Australia is where the company that he was originally cut his teeth in, that's where it's based. And there he is, you know, showing great respect for the rest of his Western Australians by being sprung and accused of flying his helicopter across the border so he could get in and out of Western Australia.
They're so creepy, aren't they?
They are COVID regulations, and this is the head of the Morrison government's COVID task force. Mr. Liveris, who had cut his teeth playing a role helping out Donald Trump, his big thing, both with Trump and, of course, back here in Australia when he's put in charge of the task force, the manufacturing task force, is to escalate this focus that manufacturing, the biggest thing that could happen to manufacturing would be gas extraction. The only honourable voice in all of this in the task force was the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union representative of the task force, Paul Bastian, who, constrained, if you like, from having taken on the role of being in that task force, nevertheless made two or three different comments at early stages saying that the focus had to be on getting a stock take done of what could be done at the moment and how that can be developed, fixing up the supply chains, making them more dependent and on a revitalised local manufacturing base. He was the one trying to soften the impact, the focus upon gas, and to get it directed more precisely upon what needed to be done. At one point he said, you know, what needs to be done in the next 10 months, what needs to be done in the next few years and in the longer term. And all that was on the record, but relatively ineffectual because, and this is where we get to the nub of it, last Friday when this ABC report came out describing the plight of these manufacturers who are capable of making rats in Australia and have been trying to do so. The first thing is the report didn't make any reference at all to the task force, nor to the government's response to the task force, which was to set up about a 1.5 or 1.3 billion, there's different reports on that, to actually enable certain specific things to happen in the area of medical products. So money was set aside, 1.3 billion, maybe 1.5 billion, was set aside to enable this pivot to manufacturing, included in the area of medical products.
Now, this is really shocking.
What was announced last Friday was the specific program that was available to employers to access that money was closed down. Now there may be a new one. Who knows? Who knows what will be in the next advertisement from the Prime Minister? In all of this, the Minister has been silent. Even the Fraudenberg has barely said a talking about is more offshore procurement.
That's unreal. That's so outrageous.
It's and get most of the procurement, by the way, comes from China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So China, of course, has got its act together with the manufacturing of this very important medical commodity.
It's also got its act together in terms of public health, by all accounts.
You'd have to say that is true, overwhelmingly true. And there are other pockets, other countries and pockets of countries around the world that have done that. I mean, this is a very basic question, if I can put it this way. If Cuba, which is subject and has been since the late 60s, to the most vicious economic blockade intended, in its own words, by the United States State Department to harm the people so that theoretically they will rise up against their socialist government. If it can match, a three, and I think it's maybe even four now, of its own vaccines and make sure that public health is the first priority, and it's a success story in the link between public health and manufacturing, why is it not possible for Australia to do the same? And the simple answer to that is essentially in two ways. Is that firstly, we don't have a government, nor an alternative government, that has understood the importance of manufacturing capacity in the economy, and has instead accepted the dictates of the transnational corporations in the mining or extractive sectors that Australia should be a quarry to the rest of the world. And then secondly, unfortunately, we do not have a political entity that enables the people to see that there is a genuine manufacturing-based alternative to that. So all in all, the whole thing is another one of those things that Australia is more and more recognised for, which is that we're all wind. We're not really fair dinkum about what is needed, and that we are, if you like, surfing about a little bit on luck.
Yeah, but also we're in the back pockets of a very small group of very rich Americans.
Yes. There are in Australia, there are pockets of the union movement, and other places there are progressive people in the manufacturing community who put out a useful newsletter that tell you about what's going on in manufacturing, but they're overall, they're ineffective. Manufacturing employers, big, medium and small, don't listen to them very much in terms of investment, and certainly the government plays games with them, and that's what's been going on. I think we will see more, another announcement by the government about manufacturing that will say something about $1.3 billion or $1.5
billion. Yeah, some bullshit.
Just by the by, in terms of what is actually needed and what's possible, $1.3 to $1.5 billion to pivot to manufacturing, to make it modern, which is necessary, is nowhere near adequate. It sounds a lot ordinary person in the street, but it's a drop in the ocean, really. And the debacle around the capacity to make rats available is just a normal thing.
Yeah.
In Australia, it's a debacle.
And
in my view, it is probably deliberate in the sense that the whole scheme was cooked up to enable Morrison to give the impression he was doing something exciting, and also, secondly and more seriously, to find another avenue to justify climate heating, methane-producing gas extraction.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we have to finish, but there was a very interesting announcement yesterday about the BHP Billiton. The headline was something about BHP Billiton being the largest company in Australia, kicking off the Commonwealth Bank. You know, like that's really important to all of us on the street, of course. But the reason for why it is so is because they've decided to marry the two parts of the company together, which they had separated for tax reasons. But then if you listen to the report further, it said that it would now favour the extractivist part of the business even more because of the financial backing that it will get.
Yes, so, well,
you know, so, you know, climate change, climate disaster, what's that?
Yeah, so they don't care about things like that because BHP, I haven't read this particular article, and you can bet that, in fact, the decisions that are being made will have repercussions for, you know, the ordinary person in the street in some way or another.
Yeah, and the other one that's very interesting, which we can't really follow up today, is an announcement from this group of people that I get that is related to finance, that there's going to be a massive reduction in the amount of superannuation companies in Australia from about a little over 100 to about 22. And that these superannuation funds are now going to be the big companies going out for international investment over the next year, because this particular newsletter I get is actually aimed at investor companies, hedge funds.
I think we do have to get our heads around what's going on
in superannuation.
In superannuation, both the private sector, well, it's all private sector, but I mean the specific private sector, and then the industry super funds, which are often quite incorrectly, in my view, described as workers' capital. It is workers' capital, but
it should be.
The purpose of that implies that workers have some degree of control over it, which they don't, except through, you know, the fact that there are union representatives on the boards of the industry super funds.
Not if the federal government has anything to do with it. Yeah. Even that's too much.
Yeah. Just for any of your listeners, before we finish on manufacturing, there is a terrific article, actually, about what's going on in super, written by a fellow called Rod Pickett, in the latest Journal of Australian Political Economy. And that draws upon previous articles in that journal about superannuation, and it's worth having a look at and maybe discussing at some stage in some way by someone who's more expert about it than I am.
Yeah, because they're all married. I mean, there's huge amounts of money, finance and manufacturing and the future of the country. They're all married together, basically.
Yeah. To go back to the manufacturing thing, today, in a sense, is part one, because we haven't said anything about, well, what is going to be the response of the ALP and the Greens in the context of the election.
Mm.
Keeping in mind that particularly under the leadership of Penny Wong, the ALP in government and in opposition have been champions of free trade.
Yep, that's
and
true.
That is a factor in the historical factor in the situation whereby it's such a struggle for manufacturing unions, their members and potential members, to be able to ensure that manufacturing can make the contribution that it's capable of in dealing with the pandemic.
Well, perhaps we can talk next week so that we can finish it off, if you're into it.
Yes, well, we should have a discussion about it, because it's really important that we understand what the alternative government might be doing about a disaster that the current government is perpetuating.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Don.